To the City Club of Eugene's April 9th, 2021 program, Changes on the Eugene 4J Board, a Candidate Forum. This is the 28th program of our 2020-2021 programming year. My name is Scott Coltrane, and I'm the City Club President. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and our sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page, and are broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7 on Mondays at 7 p.m. We have both business and in-kind sponsors, including our diamond sponsors, Kaiser Permanente, University of Oregon, Peace Health, and Lane Community College, as well as generous support from the City of Eugene and from Lane County. In today's program, we welcome 4J school board candidates, Position 3, Tom DiLiberto and Judy Newman, Position 6, Maya Rabassa, and Position 2, Laurel O'Rourke and Harry Sanger. Biographical information on our speakers is available on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. I would like to thank Sandra Bishop for coordinating today's program. On May 18th, voters in Eugene School District 4J will have the opportunity to choose among the candidates for three seats on the board. The race for position three features two newcomers to elective politics taking on an incumbent. The race for position six has only one candidate, hoping to replace veteran Jim Torrey, who was appointed to fill a seat unexpectedly vacated mid-term. A second candidate for position six dropped out too late for his name to be deleted from the ballot. Two new candidates vie for position two. For 12 years, this seat was held by Anne-Marie Levis, who withdrew from the race to clear the path for a candidate who she said, quote, can do some of the things I cannot, unquote. Then a second candidate tossed his hat in the ring at the last minute. In this program, all six candidates will describe their credentials and opinions about key issues. The order of speakers was set by random drawing. While the positions are numbered, the seats are at large, and everyone in the district gets to vote on all positions. Our format today includes a question and answer period with City Club members via Zoom. We'll begin with the candidates for position three, starting with Tom DiLiberto.
I'm Tom DiLiberto. Thanks for the opportunity. The board has not had someone with extensive classroom experience in over three decades. I believe we need someone who has seen firsthand how district decisions directly influence children and families. In 2018, I retired from teaching after 36 years, the last 31 years, all at Monroe Middle School, where I was hired as the first secondary language immersion teacher in the district. I taught Spanish, English, and social studies to thousands of students over the years. And to this day, I remain in touch with scores of students and their families. I've also been a strong advocate for students and teachers through my work as bargaining chair for the Eugene Education Association, which represents 4J's 900 plus licensed employees. I've also served on several joint teacher administrator teams that have collaborated to resolve district issues. These experiences have given me a strong grounding in the fiscal realities and complex decisions involved in crafting 4J budgets and priorities. I've seen a shift in 4J from empowering stakeholders to help shape schools to a more top-down approach. One of my top priorities is improving communication at both formal and informal meetings. We really need to listen better to our communities and expand the conduits through which the board gets its information. Board members need to better understand what is happening or not happening in our schools before they make decisions. In addition to this priority, I plan to focus on the following. Reopening our schools safely and sensibly, ensuring equity in all our decisions, and I plan to use my ability to speak Spanish to better engage with one of our largest and growing communities. Reducing class size and caseload for specialists. Teachers and specialists cannot do what we ask them to do under these circumstances. Also, we need to retain our great teachers, especially teachers of color, through mentoring, growing our own through our ranks, and exit surveys to examine why many of our teachers are leaving. Stopping the overuse of standardized testing. The amount of instructional time lost due to excessive testing was, when I taught and still is, detrimental to our kids. We need to protect our students' mental health, and I believe we need more counselors and school psychologists to that end. We need to make sure we teach to the whole child, not de-emphasizing social studies, art, music, drama, world language, and CTE because they aren't state-tested subjects. I have a proven record of working with parents, students, and teachers, classified employees, building administrators, and senior administrators for many years. I believe having someone with extensive hands-on experience on the board will be key in getting our district and our students to move forward. Thank you again.
Thank you, Tom. Next up, also a candidate, the incumbent for position 3, Judy Newman.
Hi. I'm so glad to be here today, too. My name's Judy Newman, and I'm currently on the 4J School Board, finishing my first term. What's important for you to know about me is that I've worked as an educator in this community for over 40 years. I come from a family of educators. It's been part of our dinner conversations for as long as I can remember. It's really my passion. I grew up in Wisconsin, and I was a young adult in a racially segregated city during the civil rights movement. I worked there with kids with disabilities in the inner city, and I saw the deep injustice, racism, and inequities. These experiences really solidified my lifelong commitment and work for equity and social justice. When I started my career in teaching and special education, I saw so many kids with disabilities really being excluded from public school and not being given a fair chance for success. I realized that many of these kids were already far behind by the time they got into my elementary classroom. But if we could start earlier and we could eliminate or minimize the obstacles these kids face and help them truly be successful, we could help them truly be successful in school and life. That's why I founded Early Childhood Cares with my dear friend Val Close in 1991. Since then, we've served over 25,000 Lane County children with developmental delays and disabilities and their families. By using proven educational supports, these kids get a fair chance. In fact, many of these children are served now and are thriving in our K-12 schools. For 25 years, I also was an instructor at the U of O of future teachers and administrators in K-12. 4 years ago, George Russell, a former superintendent of 4J, and some other local educators asked me to run for school board. They thought my expertise in early learning and special education would be assets on the school board. They also know I'm a person who listens to people with an openness to understand different points of view and experiences before I make decisions. Schools can't do it alone. I bring my experience building partnerships to the school district to help students and families access healthcare, mental health services, food, and childcare. Currently, I'm working to build new partnerships to build an expanded career technical education options for our district. I've had a great 4 years on the board. I'm a hard worker. I'm not always the loudest voice in the room, but I do get things done by bringing people along. Graduation rates in 4J are up by 17% over the last 5 years. I'm leading our All Students Belong anti-racism work. I work to expand school funding and was a leader in passing our school bond and renewing our levy. And I'm committed to getting our kids and staff back in school safely and successfully. I will continue to bring my life commitment and educational knowledge to our district. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Third candidate for position 3, Brian Costa, could not be with us today. So we'll move on to position 6, where the candidate is Maya Rabassa.
Hey, thank you for having us today. I look forward to sharing a little bit about myself. Before all else, I am the mother of 3 children and have been a 4J parent for 14 years. But my story begins 40 years ago when my family immigrated to the US from Mexico. I grew up in a home where we spoke Spanish and French, learning English at school. During my years in public school, I also learned that how children develop their sense of self-worth is often a reflection of how others see them. And too often, many of my friends from similar backgrounds did not see a reflection that showed them they could and would succeed. They did not receive a message that they were valued. They received a message that they were an issue to be handled. I began to dream of becoming a teacher, but unlike other children, it wasn't a romanticized vision of teaching that propelled me, but rather a vision that came from a place of seeing injustice occur in the classroom, on the playground, in the curriculum, in all facets of our school system. I knew I wanted to be a part of the change that I considered and still consider imperative. So for the past 30 years, I've dedicated myself to the educational arena, first as a teacher and more recently as a committed volunteer. Fast forward to today. I left the classroom when my oldest started kindergarten to help fill debilitating holes resulting from budget shortfalls. During the past 14 years, I've put in thousands of hours volunteering on the ground in over a dozen different 4J schools. Additionally, I serve on 4J's equity and budget committees. This volunteer experience, specifically the time spent in our schools, makes me a unique candidate and affords me an informative window. This experience allows me to witness what district policy looks like when put into practice by teachers, school staff, and volunteers. It shows me where and how our schools continue to face challenges, as well as what innovations and shifts in practice are proving to be successful. At the forefront of this insight is a sincere understanding that representation and prioritizing diverse perspectives and expertise are vital for a healthy district. This understanding serves as the cornerstone of my value system. I value the voice and expertise of our students, staff, families, our community. I'm committed to strengthening the bridge between district leadership and all district stakeholders and will bring genuine community involvement into the decision-making arena. These are the reasons I'm endorsed by 4J's Teachers Union and Classified Staff Union. It's why I'm endorsed by elected officials like Lane County Commissioner Lori Trieger, LCC Board Member Lisa Fragola, and our Mayor Emeritus Kitty Piercy. It's why countless community leaders and community members also endorse me. By voting for me, you will not only bring my voice to the table, you will bring our whole community to the table. Because where I go, I bring you with me. Thank you.
Thank you, Maya. We move on. Our final position is position 2, and we'll start with Laurel O'Rourke.
Thank you, City Club, for providing this opportunity for the community to get to know the candidates. Forums like this are important for our local races. I was a student of 4J, and I am a mom to 5 children who have attended 4J schools. I have firsthand knowledge on how important one's experience at school is to shaping a young person's future. My campaign slogan is a voice for working parents, success for every student. I lead with working parents because I am one. I know firsthand how challenging it can be to have our concerns considered and our voices heard in the school system. I say every student because I'm concerned about marginalized students that struggle to excel in a system that narrowly defines success. It is worth noting that nearly 1/3 of graduating students are not college bound. Many are entering adulthood unprepared financially for the responsibilities and challenges that await them. It is our responsibility to keep kids engaged in school. I believe a robust career and technical education program that does not solely focus on moving young adults onto colleges, but provides options for every student who would like to leave school with the ability to earn a living wage. It is through my and my children's experience that I see the need for a different perspective at the table. I've seen my 3 children who have IEPs struggle with their education and how the system fails to accommodate the needs of kids like mine. I have had to repeatedly advocate on behalf of my children for schools to follow the accommodations that are required by law. Because of the military, I have the unique position of working with 5 different school districts. I have never had to fight as hard for my children's education as I have had to do at 4J. Parents, students, and staff need their voices to be valued. I strongly believe that all kids deserve to follow their dreams, regardless of their ability to thrive independently in the current system. We still have a long way to go in 4J when it comes to policies and actions that uphold the values of diversity, equity, and inclusion. It was encouraging to see past statements from superintendents and the board support of Black Lives Matter. It is also positive to see that the district has a strategic plan with the goal of equitable access and outcomes for every student. However, public statements and plans are only as good as how things are actually implemented on the ground. As a Black woman, I understand equity on a very personal level. Equity isn't just about how we speak and value each other. Inequity is embedded into our systems. Because it is systemic, it must be addressed at policy and systems level. My academic career was centered on social justice issues, and my professional career has involved service to some of the most vulnerable and marginalized people in our community. These experiences are part of who I am and will be the foundation of how I approach work on the board. When we hear marginalized voices, we learn why we are not achieving success for every student. There's a need for new voices that will advocate for those outside the mainstream that struggle to succeed in our schools. I believe in and support 4J School District. And I also believe that I can play a role in elevating the district's work on educational inequity. We can and must do better.
Thank you, Laurel. Second candidate for position two is Harry Sanger.
Hello, City Club of Eugene. Thank you for inviting us to speak today. My name is Harry J. Sanger, and I'm running for position two on the school board. For further inquiries, the campaign can be reached at hj44j@gmail.com. This is a campaign for all of the district's children, starting with the communities represented by North Eugene and Churchill High Schools. The past year has divided a nation, but our path forward comes through assuming the best in others and striving to achieve unity. We must come together to embrace the diversity of viewpoints in our community. As a board member of the River Road Community Organization and member of the River Road Santa Clara Neighborhood Plan Community Advisory Committee, I'm currently entrusted with the responsibility of engaging my North Eugene neighbors and representing their concerns at a community level. What am I hearing in my neighborhood? Concern that the latest bond measure did more harm than good, that the district was not clear on the impact to Corridor Elementary and YG. Many lament the loss of Corridor, and there's trepidation about combining YG and Kelly Middle. There is also an excitement building around North Eugene as 4J constructs its first new high school in over 50 years. With promises of enhanced career and technical education, this new school will be a great asset to the community. How do we as a school district improve communications? 4J has done a great job broadcasting recent messaging, demonstrating recognition of this issue. As anyone who has tuned into a recent board meeting can attest though, speaking time is at a premium. I propose providing a regular forum outside of board meetings, allowing two-way communication to engage parents and the community while setting realistic expectations. Standardized testing has been a hot topic in the current cycle. Inherent challenges of remote learning over the past year impacted our most vulnerable students. Those with individualized education plans, English as a second language, large families, and working parents who lack the resources to provide a personal learning experience during the school day. Opportunities for talented and gifted students were also reduced during this trying time. Testing provides the necessary metrics for the district and each school to measure the magnitude of these impacts and ensure appropriate response. The ultimate focus should be the children. We're here to ensure they're successfully prepared for an evolving world full of challenges and surprises. This preparation can take a variety of forms, and 4J has historically done well offering flexible pathways to success. Expanding CTE programs can help ensure that all high school freshmen and sophomores are able to fill their schedules from an enticing menu of options. We need to stay agile and bring the excitement to the students to keep them engaged. As a parent of two children enrolled in the Chinese Immersion School, I'm a participant and proponent of the district school choice program. Currently cohabitating the family school campus, Chinese Immersion will be following a similar path as the Japanese Immersion program, relocating to the feeder middle school, in this case, Kennedy. Eventually feeding into Churchill High, my family is directly invested in the success of current and future Lancers. Both North and Churchill are underrepresented on the current board, and we can work together to fix that. Thank you again for inviting me to today's candidate forum, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Harry. That concludes the opening statement round, and we'll begin with a question and answer session where all five candidates will get a chance to respond to the questions that will be posed by City Club members and invited guests. Tom, we'll start with you.
Okay, thank you very much. And it's just a pleasure to be able to see the candidates speaking so forthrightly. My question is, how should we best get kids readjusted after COVID?
Tom, maybe you want to go first on that one?
Sure, I'd love to. This is unprecedented. We have to do this right. I realize everybody's worried about it. I'm worried about it. I have many, many colleagues who are starting to go back into the classroom. Our kids are going back into the classroom. We have to, one, make sure that everybody has a safe return. And I think the decision to get everybody vaccinated, all our staff vaccinated before we re-enter was a smart one. But that's the first step. Then what? There have been calls, at least discussions throughout the country, really, about what do we do about the lost time. I don't think we should be ramping up remediation and worrying so much about all the areas that we've missed. It is of concern, especially to high school students who need credits for graduation. However, I think it'd be more important to let our teachers guide our students more deeply into subjects and not try to cover all the curriculum. Deeper, better, I think is better than broader. We have to make sure that kids re-engage with schools, that they relearn that learning is an enjoyable activity And if we force them into remediation of the lost time, I think that would be a big mistake. So I think that covers it.
Thank you, Tom. Judy, you're up next.
Thank you. Very, very timely question and really important. I mean, our kids are already in school. Last week, I got to pick my grandson up from his first full day in in-person instruction in first grade. And he was so happy to be there. It was wonderful to see all the smiling faces. So I think the thing that we really need to pay attention to first is care and connection. And that's been the direction from the Department of Education, but in our own district. We really need to meet kids where they are. They need to be welcomed in school. It's different. Everyone's wearing a mask. They're wearing a mask. So I think that warmth, that connection, that welcoming is really the very first step. Our schools are really ready by having teachers, instructional assistants, our administrators, but also we have counselors in the schools and wraparound coordinators so that we're sort of tooled up to address needs as we see them in kids. And I think that's important to get kids hooked up with the right services and make sure their social emotional needs are taken care of. And then we'll start seeing where they are for learning. I think we're all concerned about learning loss, and that is very real. But I also want to really say that many of our kids have learned a lot, things that we haven't anticipated. So I think it's really critically important we find out what they have learned and build on some of the strengths that have come out of this time as well. So I think we are ready, and it's happening, and I'm so delighted that we got everyone vaccinated so that we could make this work.
Maya, you're up next.
So I have the privilege of both a high school student and a third grader to inform my answer. One has chosen to stay online and one has chosen to go back to school, although the third grader had less of a independent option. She was a little guided by her parents. With both students, I think the most important component is to, as Judy mentioned, prioritize that social emotional component. I think that the centerpiece of that is relationships. And I think that the way we are easing back in has been tremendously helpful with small classrooms. Who'd have thunk that we'd finally have the opportunity to reduce our class sizes, a little silver lining of the pandemic. I think it's really important also to recognize the lessons that we've learned during this pandemic and to try to continue as many of the programs and services that we've dreamed up during this year and continue them and have them in place for our students as they return. One thing when I think of my high schooler who has opted to stay online is the quality of what he's been able to receive as an online student and hoping to continue that and have that in place. I know that's not quite returning to school, but it's important for us to remember that some students are not going to be able to go back to school. My son is chronically ill and he cannot attend school until he's of age to be vaccinated. It's just simply unsafe. So I think continuing to have those quality programs that address the social emotional learning, but also the academics that our students are going to eventually need in terms of that online option, and not forgetting those students who are opting for the online approach. People live in multi-generational households. For some students, it's not safe. It's just not the answer for them. And to make sure that we don't leave them by the wayside by focusing solely on the kids who will be coming back into the buildings. I think it's important, I'm just going to emphasize again, learning the lessons and holding on to them and not letting go and making sure that relationships are what's driving our decision-making process throughout that planning.
Okay, Laurel, you're next.
Yeah, I have my own two that are of the last of the five who are still in school. One's at Churchill, one is at South. My senior who's at Churchill is going to stay home because he actually has embraced it, the stay home life. And my freshman who's at South is very much, I was ready to send him back to hybrid learning, except that now I know actually it's not correct that all of our staff is vaccinated. All of our staff have the choice to be vaccinated. What that means is that I'm going to wait until my son is fully vaccinated before I send him back to school. We have grandparents, exactly what Maya mentioned. We have people in town we have to be concerned about. I mention this because this is what a lot of families are thinking about right now. What does this mean for my family? Do I have to make different choices? I work for Lane County. I know our numbers are going up. I know, while many want to believe this is not an opinion or not a scientific, problem where a lot of people are dying from it, the reality is I know the numbers, and it's the sadness that it involves and what we've been dealing with. And it's very concerning to when you know too much. For our schools, what I look at is when our kids get back in schools, I'm looking more towards September, when hopefully, fingers crossed, everybody, we're all back in school, right? And that our kids, exactly. And so I'm looking at that time, and, really, I look at cultures and how we create cultures, and really not having any talk of learning loss or anything like that. It really is meeting the kids where they're at. But also, we're going to have kids that have been in lockdown for a year. So there's going to be some more to deal with. There's going to be things that teachers haven't been dealing with, another set of curriculum to learn, which is, what it means to be in lockdown for a year with just your own family members, and what did that entail? So there's a lot we don't know yet, and we're going to learn. But I know so many of our amazing teachers and staff who are right there with the kids and helping them figure these things out. So I focus on hope and solutions. So I'm hopeful that it will go well and that we can all get back there in September. I think we're all at different places right now, and being aware of that, and not having this expectation that everybody is going to be doing hybrid, which I hear a lot, is also helpful.
All right, Harry, you're up.
Yeah, thank you. So first, I must commend the district on the quick shift last spring to online learning. To be able to pull the resources together that were required to facilitate that shift was an extraordinary accomplishment. With that said, I don't think that we can reinstitute in-person learning quick enough. I think the key here is choice, that the in-person learning needs to be one option. The online needs to remain an option. So that families from either persuasion are afforded that ability. And I think the return to in-person learning, there's an equity issue there with the current hybrid model. And I think that we really need a more regular schedule to suit working families and parents with multiple kids in multiple schools. The cohort model really throws that in a loop. So I think the choice needs to be the focus, though. I think the option should be presented, and what families are comfortable with, the school district should provide that pathway. And as to remediation, I think, maybe a possibility would be over the summer continuing more classes. I know that was a discussion in the budget meeting last night, and that offering perhaps online classes to continue over the summer to help with some of that fitting more in the limited time we have. But the reality is we're not going to be where we would expect to be in a normal year, and that is the reality. So we need to adjust to that. And as I've heard several of you say, meet the kids where they're at.
Thank you. Our next questioner is Joy. And for presenters, I'm going to go in reverse order out of fairness to all. So we'll go backwards through the same candidates. So Joy.
Hi, thanks everyone. And thanks to City Club. I appreciate this. And my question is, what should we do to improve special education in 4J?
All right, Harry.
All right, you had to give me the difficult one, huh? Joy, thank you for your question. It's a hard topic to answer because the way that we deal with special education is generally on an individualized basis. So there is no one size fits all solution. Having more resources available would be a good start. There's never enough bodies to go around to meet the needs. But I know that is a concern that I've heard, maybe the biggest concern that I've heard from this move to distance learning was the failure of the school district to meet IEPs that were already existing. So, I think we need better communication. I think there needs to be better follow-up. And just to, these are plans. And if we're not following the plans, there needs to be a more regular adjustments to figure out how to get back on track.
Thank you. Laurel.
First of all, we have amazing special education staff at 4J. I've had the opportunity to work with so many amazing teachers who are doing so much work without a lot of support. So the biggest thing I would love to see is, what I call my rainbow unicorn, or things that you can't have right away, but you should be thinking about it, is more money. Give them some money. They need so much more funding to support this hard work that they're doing. But besides that, more staff trained at a higher, some of it trained with more training, because I've seen my two kids that are in school right now, both have IEPs and are in special education. They have gone through so many teachers, which is, it's just scary, because I had my son in Churchill, didn't even know his teacher name 1 year, because he had gone through four different teachers that year in his SPED program. So I commend them, because they do so much with so little. When Measure 5 passed, we lost so much money for our schools. And I went to school in 4J, and I remember our schools having so much to give us as a kid. Yes, 70s and 80s, that was a while ago. But I really want to commend what we're doing. To make it better is really to fund it at a higher level, to listen to our teachers, because they know what they're talking about, and give them the freedom to be able to talk about what needs to happen, not to just keep the party line, but to really talk freely about what needs to happen to make it work better. And so communication, as Harry mentioned, and so many other people mentioned, communication is so important, and it really supports our teachers. And we keep great staff that we have, because that's retention is another integral part to this. There's so many things I can say about this, but I'll give other people a chance, because I'm sure you all have opinions on this too.
Maya, you're up next.
I do have opinions about this. I have a son who receives special ed services, and I am deeply grateful for the folks that work with him. I think one of the things that Laurel said that stood out to me in particular is not only retention, but recruitment. One of our greatest areas of teacher shortage is our special education teachers. We hold, you know, teacher fairs to hire, and we need to be able to attract more special education teachers, in my personal opinion. Because of the caseload issue, students often are sitting waiting to receive services. They, are identified, and before things get put into place, there's a lag, and the lifespan of a student is not very long. So even just half a year, a year, takes a lot of time away from growth. I also think that when we think about the folks who are working with our classified students, I've had the opportunity to spend a lot of time as a volunteer in I'm gonna try not to use acronyms, a comprehensive learning center with a behavior focus. And one of the reasons that I spend a lot of time doing that is because those are students who really benefit from one-on-one time. And unfortunately, that's not built into our budget in a way that I would like to see. One of the categories of adults who work with these students are our classified staff. And those are the folks who spend the majority of the time with our students. They're the ones who have this window that is not recognized in a way that I would like to see it recognized, in the sense that too often they are contracted for hours that don't allow them to attend IEP meetings, or if they do, they have to come back to the building after their hours are done. I think it'd be really crucial to look to those folks as ways to increase the, or decrease rather, the ratio that we have of adults to students. Finally, on the other side of it is the parents. And I find way too often folks are in need of advocacy, not because they can't advocate for themselves, but because there's never too much communication. There's never too much information that parents can have. And oftentimes parents are not getting as much information as they could. So I would love to see the district take on some more efforts to ensure that parents, even before they enter the system are able to understand where and how they might pursue services for their students.
Thank you. Next up, Judy.
Thanks. This is a really important question because I think, as you know, 15% of the students in 4J are in special education. First of all, the comments that Laurel made originally about communication really resonated with me. I have been transitioning kids into kindergarten in all 16 school districts in this county for many years, and we transition about 400 or 500 kids every year. And 4J, the communication in 4J could be better, I have to say. And I would like, first of all, to work on that communication. We have, and I also agree with everyone, fabulous special education teachers, specialists, and instructional assistants. They work harder than, I mean, they just work really hard, and they just are so committed to the kids. And people move to 4J because of the quality of our staff and instruction. But that communication, you know, we have those kids in our district from age 5 to 21. It's really important to get it right. So that's one thing I would work on, and I have some really good ideas about how that could be more welcoming from the beginning. And I've talked to a lot of parents and a lot of staff to really have some concrete suggestions. But the most important thing, like in our Student Success Act plan, I really feel like 4J really needs to up its game on inclusion. So one of the things I think, we have sort of a parallel system. I want to see our kids with on IEPs in special education in their home schools with their peers and bringing the supports into where in their own schools. So we talk about the pandemic, kids with special education did really struggle because of their individual plans. But one good thing happened, the general education teachers and the special education teachers partnered more together to teach kids in a way that every student got their needs met. And if we do inclusion in our local, each individual neighborhood school, we will be able to meet the needs of all of our kids. And then the ownership of those kids become the principals, the teachers, and the whole schools. So I'm really big on inclusion. I think we have some really good plans to move forward to really move the needle on that. Thank you.
Tom.
Yes, it's a good question. I think that I'd like to give thanks to the classified employees and the teachers, licensed folks who have been doing a difficult job for a very, very long time. And they haven't always been supported as they should be. One, I think their caseload is too high. When I worked in the union, we were representing occupational therapists and physical therapists who had in excess of 90 cases per specialist. And I don't know how they could even remember names. Those high caseloads are still too high, and they need to come down for people to be able to do their jobs and for kids to get the attention that they need. Also, I think that one thing that we could do to improve the communication is come up with carved out common times when general education teachers and special education teachers and specialists can come together and do IEPs, just maintain IEPs, instructional plans for the kids, and to discuss what's working, what's not working, how should we change this to make sure that we're meeting the needs of the kids. Right now, it's very difficult for SPED teachers, for special education teachers to run down a general education teacher. They have different schedules. It's always been a challenge. And I think that common times, perhaps during in-service days, would be a good step in the right direction. I've seen up close in life skills classes where there hasn't been adequate space for class, where there are too many students who need a lot of room, physical room in there. And there are a lot of employees in there, classified and licensed, who can't do their jobs for lack of space. Mentoring special education teachers and specialists, I think, is very important. If we're going to keep these very valuable employees, we need to make sure that they are mentored. And also, I think that the district, they get extra funding for the numbers that we have for special education for the students in special ed. And I think that we have to make sure that the full funding is targeted to those students. And I think we can do a better job in that respect.
Our next question comes from Priscilla.
Hello, my name is Priscilla Gould. I'm retired from a career with United Way, and that shapes my question because I've worked with a lot of boards of directors. I'd like to start with this question with Judy, and happy to hear from everybody else on it. But Judy, I know if you're reelected, you will be chairman of the board. Given the important and potentially contentious issues like bringing our kids back to school safely, like hiring a new superintendent for the district, how are you going to help this brand new board of directors come together to be a high functioning team? So I'll start with Judy and anybody else can weigh in, but I can't think of anything more important than building a team fast.
Okay, that's a challenging question, but very, very important, because I think, as we know, individuals don't get things done when you're on a board. It's the whole group that really works together to make policy, to make decisions. You know, I had never been in an elected position before I started on the school board. I've been on other boards of directors and other situations, and being an elected person, it took me a while to figure out, but we really represent everyone in the district. All the kids, all the parents, all the teachers, instruction, you know, everyone. And so it's our job to really listen and make decisions for everyone, and that we think are best for kids. So I think what I would do is, my style would be to get to know everyone on the board and what's important to them, what motivated them to run, and what are their highest priorities, and what is their vision for the district. And I know for sure, given everyone that's running is doing it because they care about education, that we can come to some common priorities and goals. And then I would figure out how we could work together to get there. But I think it would be a very, very important that everyone on the board is heard, and that we can do as much as we can by finding our common ground and moving forward. And then making sure everyone has a chance to express their opinion, and really all of us agree to be thoughtful and respectful to learn from each other, because we were all elected because our community trusted us to bring our ideas to the table.
Tom, same question.
I've had a history of working with different people with different expertise from different backgrounds to come together for a common goal. I did that quite a bit when I was working in buildings as a teacher, as a team leader. I worked in many task forces and groups with the district, and also with the Eugene Education Association. To get people to work with a team, first, I think it's good to have an array of expertise, and I think that exists, and I'm trying to add to that to a certain extent on the board. I know we have different interests, but I think that the reason we're there is because we want to help kids. We have different ways of doing it, but I think using everybody's expertise to achieve the goal is, and keeping that goal's front and center at all times, is what I tried to do as a bargaining chair with the union, what I did in buildings with the various departments and grade levels that I work with. And that's something that I did, I would continue to do as a board member.
Maya.
I really appreciate this question. It's something that has been weighing on me as a possible new member of the board. I was having a conversation with the current board chair, Mary Walston, and she pointed out that no matter what happens with the election, we're losing 24 years of institutional knowledge when Anne-Marie Levis and Jim Torrey step away. And that's a lot of insight that's not going to be sitting up there. One of the things that makes me feel confident that this transition will be successful is a plan that Mary has in place to make one of her last acts of board chair be to assign new board members with a longstanding board member to serve as a mentor. I know that that was in place until the pandemic hit, and I've heard from folks that that was extremely helpful. And I look forward to having that opportunity. In so much so, I sit on the board of Centro Latinoamericano, and we're in a transition point right now as well. And as soon as you mentioned that, I'm taking it to our retreat as a prospect for us as well, because we're bringing on new members. So I think that that can serve as a mechanism to smooth over the bumps that are inevitable.
Thank you. Laurel.
Yes. The way I see this question is, how am I going to be part and succeed in making this a high functioning team? And the work I do now with Lane County is I work with teams all the time. All of us are probably mostly on Zoom calls all the time. So I apologize for reminding everybody, like right now. But the reality is, to have big ideas is great. I have a lot of them. I'm really excited about them. It doesn't do me any good to have big ideas if I'm running off in one direction by myself. I need to bring everybody with me. I need to really talk about and help explain why this is a good idea, show the reasons. And this is what I do every day, because a lot of what I do is in work around equity and things like that is maybe not in somebody's framework, really. You know, if it's not something they've worked on a lot, it's not something that they've thought of or had to think of. So I'm like, come along with me instead of shame on you for your thought process, because which one will work, right? It's not the second one. So I'm very much about high functioning teams are teams with a lot of intelligent people. We've got that. It's teams that really care about this town and what we're doing in this district. We've got that. I mean, we've really got all the ingredients to do the work well. I'm not a politician, it probably shows. That's fine. Because really what that means is my passion lies within my values and my ethics and making things work for our students and leading to change, not how am I gonna get to be governor someday? Because I won't be, newsflash. So I really appreciate the question, because it's one I don't think you hear a lot. How is this gonna work together? And it's so important that we do work well together. I've met everybody on the board, and Anne-Marie Levitz, who did the amazing thing of stepping aside and saying, my time is ended and I really want your voice here. And and she saw the necessity for that, because there's nobody that looks like me on the board, is really exciting. And she's still going to be working with me, which I really appreciate, because that, what a big heart that is, because we all care what goes on in this, in our place here in little Eugene, little big Eugene.
Harry.
All right. Priscilla, thank you so much for the question. And thank you so much for the work that United Way does. It's incredible. So as Maya mentioned, I think Mary's idea for a mentor for new board members is essential to bring people online and into the fold. You know, we talk about it for staff in the district. It makes sense for board members as well. I participate in a group currently. It's the Land Use Leadership Initiative. And they set a guidelines at the beginning of our sessions that outlined the expectations of members for participation and treating each other with respect. And I think that's a big part of success. And, you know, just a few keys, you know, we need to listen. We need to listen to each other and be open to other people's experiences. We really need to build trust. And then we need to set goals and be accountable to those goals. And if we do those things, I think that's a recipe for success. And, you know, I know the school board meetings tend to be long in duration. And that's a common concern, both for the board members and for the community participation. And, you know, I think that there's some steps we can take to address that. And, you know, getting good information in the committees prior to the meetings and having that information available for all the board members to read through and understand before the board meeting, so that we're not learning about the information as we go. We already learn it and understand it. And then we're just having the discussion. So, I really look forward to the opportunity to work with the incredible people that are on the board, as well as the candidates that come out of this process. Thank you.
Now we'll conclude with closing statements from each candidate of under 1 minute, and we'll start with Laurel.
Okay. I appreciate this time. My story is, I was a Black kid who Went to school on 4J. I was policed. I didn't understand. There were no words like we have now for like implicit bias or policing. I didn't think I had worth or ability. And it's hard, but that's one of the main reasons I'm here is I know these things are still happening in our school system. And I know we're working to change it, but there's no substitute for having a Black or an Indigenous person in a leadership role and at the table. The perspective has been missing from the 4J board. I believe my lived experience as a Black woman and years of experience doing anti-poverty work provides insight into the needs of our marginalized communities and their children. I would like to continue moving the needle forward on equity related policies and practices at the district. And when I say that, I don't just mean race. My work is anti-poverty. Most of my work is anti-poverty. And I want all voices, even everyone that has felt the sting of marginalization, to be heard. And I don't think that's happening now. And I think I could be part of bringing that forward. Another part of this is getting back into school safely. Thank you, everybody, for this opportunity.
Thank you, Laurel, and we know you have a competing meeting. Harry, you're up next.
All right, thank you, and thank you, Laurel. I really value your work for anti-poverty in the community. I've seen you on the county board, and I would just say, growing up with a diverse community of peers, I watched some fall out of a system that was not meant for them. To improve equity in our school system, we need to expand expectation of outcomes. By embracing a holistic approach to education, we recognize the importance of scholastics, skills beyond scholastics, trade education, and reducing the learning gap through a renewed dedication to IEPs. It starts by reducing our reliance on digital interactions, which will help us reform the personal bonds that strengthen a community. In closing, we embrace elements from both sides of each argument. Where we lie on these spectrums forms the basis of our opinions, and debate is designed to persuade us to one side or the other. But the goal is not to end up at one extreme, rather to find a balance that most benefits society. I'm running to ensure excellence in the education of our children. Harry Sanger will be a renewed voice for the North Eugene and Churchill communities. Now that you've heard from me, please say hi at the park or out on the bike path and provide your feedback to the campaign via email at hj44j@gmail.com. Thank you again to the City Club of Eugene for the honor of sharing with you today.
Thank you, Harry. Maya.
So I'm going to go a little bit off script, and because I feel as though there's something that was missing in our conversation today that I believe all of us probably hold dear. And that's the importance of elevating the voice and experiences of the students in 4J. One of my favorite parts about the experience of this campaign process has been interacting with two members of my advisory team, kitchen cabinet, whatever you want to call it. I have had the privilege of having two student interns on my campaign team, and the insight and the perspective that they bring is something that is really lacking when they're not participating in meetings. And I really want to say a deep thank you to both Bailey and Ileana for participating in my campaign process. But in addition to that was an unexpected person who jumped on board. I want to publicly thank Dakota Boulette for deciding that in the process of withdrawing his candidacy, he didn't just disappear. He has committed himself to contributing to my campaign process as well. And his insight and his dedication, I mean, we text several times a day often, and I really appreciate that he is not just moving away. And I'm really excited and hopeful that the community pays attention to this very passionate and very thoughtful young man. I'm not sure I've met anyone who approaches life with the lens, with the depth of compassion that he does. And I'm very grateful for his jumping on board and endorsing my campaign, but also not just endorsing it, but advising me and offering really important insight that I, as a 46-year-old woman who never attended 4J, could ever access without the generosity of him and my other two student team members. So that's where I'll close today. Thank you.
Thank you, Maya. Judy.
Thank you. That was a great comment. I do think students' voice needs to be elevated, but because students are really my top priority and the reason I'm on the school board. And my goal is to provide an equitable, high-quality education that engages all students. So I'm grateful and inspired by the hard work and creativity of our 4J teachers and staff. The magic I see in the classrooms that I visit is what motivates me to actually be part of the school board and the school district. I'm really proud of what 4J is doing in so many ways. I'm really honored to be endorsed by a broad range of organizations and people in this community. I invite you to go to my website as well. It's electjudynewman.com. And because you'll see, I mean, I've worked many years, and I think my endorsers really speak to that. They're leaders in nonprofits, they're leaders from communities of color, parents, grandparents, our state legislators, the labor commissioner, the mayor of current mayor of Eugene, Democratic Party, a long list, labor unions. So I believe the range of my endorsers is evidence of my commitment to bringing people together and listening to all points of view to make decisions that benefit all students in our district and our whole community. So I want to thank the City Club for this forum and for everyone's time. And please feel free to reach out to me with any questions that didn't get asked today.
Thank you, Judy. Tom.
I believe this district needs someone who has actually seen and experienced the effects in classrooms of board policies and decisions. I have that practical experience. I've been there. I also have a long history of asking questions and getting to the bottom of the matter when groups or individuals are overlooked or forgotten in the district. I will bring my expertise as a practitioner to the board, but I will continue to ask questions and truly listen when I don't know the answers. I really appreciate this opportunity, and I thank City Club and the rest of the candidates for appearing today. It's been great.
Thank you, Tom. This has been our April 9th, 2021 program, Changes on the Eugene 4J Board, a Candidate Forum. Before we proceed, I'd like to recognize our Diamond sponsors. Kaiser Permanente exists to provide high-quality, affordable healthcare services and to improve the health of our members and the communities we serve. More information at www.kp.org. Support comes from the University of Oregon. Since 1876, UO has helped Oregonians question critically, think logically, reason effectively, communicate clearly, act creatively, and live ethically. More information at uoregon.edu. Peace Health is proud to serve Eugene, Lane County, and beyond. As your hometown healthcare partner for more than 80 years, our mission is to keep you and your family healthy. Learn more at peacehealth.org. Lane Community College transforms lives through learning. LCC provides comprehensive, accessible, high-quality educational opportunities that promote student success. For more information, visit lanecc.edu. I would also like to acknowledge our gold sponsors, Dr. Sandy Ibarra of the Hearing Associates, Homes for Good, and Pacific Cascade Federal Credit Union. Before we thank our speakers today, I have a few more quick announcements. Thank you to our in-kind sponsors, KRVM 91.9 Radio, PAC Info and Simplified Computing LLC, and Dot Dotson's Photography. And a special thank you to public radio station KLCC FM 89.7 for airing City Club programs on Mondays at 7 p.m. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page. If you are a City Club of Eugene member, you can ask a question at a future taping of our programs. If you are not yet a member, you can join and then participate. More information is on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Our program next week will have Mayor Lucy Vinnis give an update on a few of the critical issues facing Eugene. Join us for key issue updates from Eugene Mayor Lucy Vinnis. More details and information about future programs can be found online at the City Club's website, cityclubofeugene.org. Now, I would like to thank today's speakers for a great program on the 4J school board races. Tom DiLiberto, Judy Newman, Maya Rabassa, Laurel Aroque, and Harry Sanger, thank you very much for answering questions and presenting your candidacies. This concludes today's program. Be well and stay safe.